Oh, no, no, no. It's that time of the afternoon where we talk to our business futurist here at 6BR. It's Morris Mizalowski. G'day, Morris.
G'day, Jason. You're never alone.
I'm never alone, I know. Well, hey, anytime I'm here in the studio, I know that I've got lots and lots of people listening, and I've got Anya who sat out there in the production area. It's certainly not a lonely job. There's just so many people around me.
Well, this is a good thing.
It's fantastic. And you've got lots of people around you as well, because one of the things that you do is you talk to people about technology and what's coming down the pipeline.
I do. Technology and business trends in general.
Unbelievable. How do you know this stuff?
Oh, it's a lifelong learning.
You got a crystal ball that you peer into?
No, none of that. No crystal balls, not any of that. Really just a lot of hard work that's fun. Well, a lot of fun work that's hard.
That's right, yeah. Well, what's that old saying that says if you do a job you love, you'll never work another day in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm very lucky. I get to meet new people every day to find out really exciting, interesting things and to think about and to imagine.
Well, tell me some interesting things about what's coming down the pipeline.
You know, there was an interesting report this week from IBISWorld talking about the future of industries for this year, what some of the big industries are likely to be. And one of them is a really good news story for Western Australia. And that's the number one growth industry this year is set to be diamond and gemstone mining.
Huh.
Of which 92% of that comes from Western Australia.
No.
Yeah.
What, 92% in Australia comes from Western Australia?
Well, it says the industry is based in Western Australia with 92% of total production being produced
wow.
in Western Australia.
That's phenomenal. I didn't realise. I mean, I knew we did a lot of iron ore and nickel and stuff like that, but gemstones?
Yeah. Now, the gemstones that have come out of Western Australia aren't the ones we necessarily put on our finger. So they're not that quality. They're more likely to be used for industrial grade type things. So they're used for drilling and for mining and for cutting and those sorts of bits and bobs.
But still, it's a fascinating number. I never would have guessed it'd be that high.
No, neither would I. But it is, and that's a good news story to know that this year is going to consolidate and grow in that field. The other one that's interesting for me is online education.
Oh, go on.
One of the growth industries for this year has seemed to be the online education world, and we're told it's going to increase by 10.6% to be worth just under $4.9 billion by the end of the year.
Wow. So, when we talk online education, what are we talking about there? Is this things like face-to-face over Skype, or is this pre-recorded stuff that you get via a website?
In this instance, it's mostly pre-recorded materials. They're talking about the notion that that internet's getting faster, the need for lifelong education is a growing one. We've talked before about the notion of 6 careers, 14 jobs for the average person going into the workforce today. And just the fact that we're moving so fast, there's always something new to learn, regardless of what the industry is. And a lot of that seems to be shifting over the last few years online. And that's where the growth is coming from.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, the interesting thing about that is that doesn't have to be based in one particular country, does it? That can be generated anywhere and used globally.
Absolutely. And Australia has very, very good credentials in this case. What we do is to put together good, solid educational products. And as you said, we allow students from all over the world to come and use them. They're not physically here, they're online, but they're certainly learning from Australians and they're using our standards to be able to talk what needs to be done.
I mean, even some of the Open University stuff is available online as well as on television. So that's incredible. And what would be the normal methodology for consuming that? Is that done on things like iPads or just on PCs?
It's really done across the board. I would say at this stage it's more PC and laptop-based, but we're certainly going to move towards iPad over the next year or two. The whole educational sphere seems to be moving towards iPad or tablets in education, but it seems to be mostly iPad at this stage. There's a lot of new apps around. I think it's something like 20,000 apps for education alone for the iPad at last count. So we're definitely moving towards it. A lot of classrooms, I actually did a presentation with higher education late last week talking about this, and a lot of the classroom environments, higher education and secondary, are looking at how to use these kinds of tablets into the classroom. And of course, we talked a couple of weeks ago about university, the new online textbooks coming from Apple, and that's going to be a big boon onto this space as well.
I know my kids have had a subscription to something called Mathletics for a couple of years now, and it allows them to practice all of their math skills at home in an online environment that feels more like a game.
Yeah, it does, and that's that gamification notion, the notion that we can teach kids really good, solid materials they need to learn, but we can make it fun for them. I talk about it often as being, you know, it's better than, but it's the days when I used to get a gold star or an elephant stamp, and if I was really, really good, got a piece of chocolate for doing something. it's just that notion. It's taking that understanding that kids like to be rewarded, they like to have fun, and we're blending that with the online world to teach them what they need to know.
I just wonder if sometimes the online learning, there's some negatives associated with it in that the kids have this desire to be hyper-stimulated all the time.
They do, and online learning is definitely not for everybody. So this will never, ever replace physical education, nor should it. But it's a supplement to it. So a moment ago, we were really talking about post-VC, post-high school education. But in school, it really can only and should only ever be used as a tool, because you're right, it can overstimulate children. But it also, even though at this stage it's intuitive, it seems to be able to answer some of the questions kids have, there's nothing like a proper, well-taught, well-rounded teacher in front of a student to make sure education's what it should be.
Oh, it's so very true. And even I have, you know, seen people in lecture theatres who should know better. They're there ostensibly to learn the particular subject, but they're there with their laptops and they're on Twitter and Reddit and Dig and all these different websites and not really paying too much attention to what's going on in class.
Well, they are and they aren't. It's an interesting debate. There's one again that I had last week with many of the lecturers in the room. You're right to some extent. They're not paying much attention, but we talk about this notion of multitasking. I'm not sure whether that physically is able to be done, by the way. There's a lot of new research coming out saying multitasking is really a misnomer. It's not something we can do. But kids nowadays are used to doing more than one thing at once. Not necessarily a good thing, but they're used to it.
Mm.
So you'll often find that even though it appears they're not listening, they are. And the challenge that I put to the audience last week was that we need to find ways to use these tools, as Maxwell Smart said, for niceness, not for evilness. So we can meet them halfway. We can actually make education exciting by using these tools that they're comfortable with, these online bits and pieces, to supplement the physical world.
I do like the idea, and there's been a little bit of arguing about this during the week as to whether or not kids as young as 6 or 7 should have iPads. I think having iPads in a school environment, not necessarily ones that the kids own themselves, but certainly available in the classroom, it's not just an important thing for them to learn. I believe it's a critical thing for them to learn going forward. And I'm starting to look back at things that, like running writing, cursive writing now, and think, well, I don't know how relevant that is to kids who are, you know, coming through the system now. I would much rather my children learn how to use an iPad, how to learn a PC, how to type, all of those skills that are far more important today than what cursive writing was 50 years ago.
And this is the whole issue around education at the moment, of whether much of the curriculum is actually taught, is actually being put together for an historical perspective of what we used to have to know, and not really much for the forward perspective. I think you're right about whether it's an iPad or a tablet, but it has a great purpose in classroom. You need to remember that we're talking about a tool. That's all that it is. And again, need never take over what else needs to be done. In my day, if I can equate it back, we used to use blocks in classroom, you know, physical little blocks, bigger ones, larger ones, medium ones, and all of those, you know, spelled out how many numbers we had. I've seen in classrooms down to kindergarten where they use tablets for special education, in other words, children that need more than the mainstream average teaching, and they're able to put an iPad in front of each of the students as well as a physical teacher, and on each iPad is a specialist app that's made not necessarily for that student, but for that student's preferred learning style. And he or she is learning the material. The teacher's up the front doing whatever he or she does really well. But the physical trying of it is different for each student because each app has been fine-tuned for them. So even though they're all learning individually, they're really all learning collectively the same thing that the teacher's telling them. And from a teaching's perspective, that's always what we've tried to do. We've always tried to flex our learning styles appropriately. So again, as a tool, I think these things are wonderful in the classroom. And you're right, there's actually a lament at the moment, because what's happening is when students are getting to their final year of school, a lot of schools are now having to reteach handwriting.
Yeah, that's right.
Because students have forgotten how to handwrite. So the question is, do they need to know that? And there's no ready answer for that. Nowadays, most probably a little bit.
Well, I've never used cursive since I left school.
No. And I would honestly guess, and many listeners are not going to be happy with this, but in 20 years, 10, 20 years from now, writing will almost be like calligraphy. You know, it'll be a science and an art. It'll be something that, obviously, we'll all know how to move a pen. I mean, I don't think that will ever go away, but the bulk of what we do will not be through a pen. The bulk of what we do will be through a keyboard, and we're seeing that now anyway.
I think there's something to be said for cursive writing teaching a little bit of dexterity and good hand skills, but there's other ways to do that as well.
Yeah, and it's again the emphasis that we put onto it, and we need to look at that. And that's one of the things that's being done around curriculum. There was a lot of effort put on handwriting. There was a lot of effort put on our times table, on basic grammar. And I'm not for a moment saying these things aren't important at all. They're absolutely fundamental issues. But do we need as much time, given that we're most probably going to use tools moving forward to help us with some of those things?
Yeah, we don't have many blacksmiths anymore, do we?
No, we don't. We don't. And this education debate is a really interesting one. But I always say we need to be careful that we're teaching forward and not backwards. But give students of tomorrow a good structure, because they really do have to do much different work than you and I did. You know, when I finished school, when I finished my higher education, I got a piece of paper theoretically, and that saw me through 40 or 50 years of education and my life and career. And that was pretty much all I needed to work my career through. Nowadays, kids don't have that luxury. As I said before, it's 6 careers, 14 jobs. They're constantly learning, constantly having to change their careers. We all know that, unfortunately, there's no lifetime career anymore. It's very rare. So we need to give our children really different skills than the one we had.
I completely agree. Morris, we'll have to leave it there. We'll talk to you again next week.
A pleasure. Look forward to it.
Good on you. Morris Mizalowski there, our business futurist. It's